5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one.
Big poll on my Fox and Friends program, a national program, obviously, on the Fox News Channel this morning. The poll had the viewers 60-40 in favor of the Kansas City Royals in the World Series. I think you all listening right now might have a different take on that. Now, there is no doubt but that the Royals lineup is a powerful one. They won the second straight American League pennant. But here come the Mets. Go Mets. Grandison, Wright, Murphy, Cespedes, Duda. Pretty good lineup, Guns Gunselman.
It's going to be a fun one. Begins
what are you
tonight.
Thinking, dude?
You know, the New Yorker in me, but I'm such a huge Yankee fan, but I have to. All right. I want the Mets to win, all right? I didn't think I would ever say that.
Oh,
but
what a grudging admission.
I want the Mets to win, but I think the Royals will win in six.
The Royals in six, says Guns. I'm going to ask you why in a second. Noam Layden, do you have an opinion on, your kids are such baseball fanatics. What are you looking at?
You know, I've heard everybody's different voice their opinion on it, and I have my own. I think it's going to go all seven, and it's going to be the Royals.
All seven, and you also the Royals.
Yeah.
Now, first Guns, why Guns do you think the Royals are better than the Mets?
I just think that they're, you know, the veterans, that the fact that they went all the way to game seven last year. I think that the Mets, I don't think the Mets have it. And the thing is, Harvey's pitching tonight. It's going to be raining. He hasn't pitched in 10 days. And the question, you know, can come up, well, is the fact that the Mets, since they won so quickly, did they have too much rest? Did they have too much time off? You know what I mean? That they're not coming off of, just 2 days rest or 2 days since their last game like the Royals are.
You guys baffle me. you want the pitcher to be rested. Right. Too much rest.
Right.
Not enough rest. He has a bellyache. He ate a steak. He had hash.
It's going to be fun, though. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Isn't Matt Harvey really a quality player? Isn't he someone with enough depth of experience that the relative inexperience of the ball club isn't going to affect his performance on the mound?
Well, he hasn't been pitching that for that long because he was out.
His last game was pretty damn good. He was he's 2-0, right?
Right, he's 2-0, and but he missed all of last season, and this is, you know, of course, this is the World Series, so it's kind of like everything that you've learned in the past doesn't matter. You can throw it all away.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I apologize deeply for my staff so far. Guns Gunselman saying
go Yankees,
it's going to be the Royals in six. Noam Layden saying it's going to be the Royals in seven. Crash, it's up to me and you to vote the other way. What do you say?
You know what? I think it's going to come down to can the Mets. The Mets are a fastball team. The Royals hit fastballs, so I think it's can the Mets get some runs early so they don't have to face the Kansas City bullpen, or can they get enough support? I think I want the Mets. I think it's going to go seven. It's going to go either way. I think it's the. I'm pulling for the Mets, but I think it could be the Royals.
Wow! And Crash is a Crash actually has a Mets jersey on right now.
Yeah, I say it's the Mets. It's the Mets in seven. They're going to win. in Kansas City Wednesday, November.
How much do you want to bet? What do you want to bet?
3 days. All right, let's bet.
Let's do something here.
But yeah. I have a question before, and I got to ask this of Guns particularly. Yeah. But Crash, feel free to join in. When it's raining, now there used to be a spitball. Now, or they have all kinds of substances they put on balls, or they use sandpaper on balls sometimes to get some of the pitchers when they go a little bit over the line into the dark side. When it's raining, when the ball is wet, does that favor the pitcher or the batter? What do you think, Guns?
I would think that it definitely favors the batter because the pitcher doesn't have as good of a grip.
He's not getting a grip on the ball.
So like if it's supposed to curve, you're not getting that much of a. It's going to be a hanging curveball. See you later. So. Not good.
So the Royals, a fastball hitting team. The Mets, a fastball pitching team. A bad matchup, says my staff.
Only Curtis Granderson and Juan Uribe have been to the World Series out of everyone on the Mets team in the past.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Okay,
that
good.
Doesn't mean a thing.
By the way, if you want to help me out, although I'll be covering for WABC, but if you wanted to go to the game on Friday, so for the listeners out there, tonight is game one, tomorrow's game two, both in Kansas City. Friday is game three.
Here comes Curtis Lula.
Right? How could you possibly be supporting the Mets, you traditor?
That's what we need. That's a voice of reason. From Curtus the Madman Sliwa. Well, grab Sliwa back.
Curtis is wearing a blue beret right
get
now.
On the microphone
everything
right.
All right, Curtis, I'm about to segue into what do you think about if Randolph Holder Sr., the father of the slain NYPD officer, wants Reverend Sharpton to speak. Should Reverend Sharpton speak at the funeral of the slain officer?
Well, let me tell you, Ronaldo, it's the father's wish. Father's been a stand-up guy. If he wants Sharpton, Aslam Shady Sharpton of the National Action Hate Network, it's his choice. Although, obviously, you see the fiancé is opposed to it. That's a family matter. But I will tell you this. Aslam Shady Sharpton, again, is going to come in there and he's going to try to co-opt the process and act like all of a sudden he's friends of cops. Are you kidding, Geraldo? You know how many homies in the streets actually refer to Reverend Al, Reverend 911, as the guy who has inspired them to flip the bird to the cops, not cooperate and say, F you 50, F you DTs, you can't touch me because Reverend Al Slim Shady Sharpton says that. Now he's going to somehow undo it with one eulogy? What do you think? We're schmucks and we're putzes. We're going to forget over 40 years of hate that he has spread around the city towards cops?
Ladies and gentlemen, as Curtis Sliwa so prudently and reasonably suggests, Reverend Sharpton has been the enemy of cops everywhere in regards to him stirring up the community. But he was invited to speak at the funeral of the slain officer, the NYPD officer, Randolph Holder. The funeral is on Wednesday. There is a viewing today. I'll be going out there for that. The invitation, again, as Curtis said, has been extended by the officer's father, himself a cop, Randolph Holder Sr., a cop in his native Guyana. Late yesterday, we did get word that the murdered cop's fiance has announced that she opposes Sharpton's address. I want to address at the funeral. I want all of you to weigh in, 866-ERALDO. Many city cops unhappy with the invitation that the dad offered to Sharpton, if indeed he did, and it apparently is true that the dad did offer Sharpton the opportunity to speak at the funeral because of exactly what Curtis said, and you know it. You've lived through it. I've known Sharpton for 40 years. I've known him as long as I've known Curtis. Sharpton has been a prime mover in leading these protest marches, in these rallies alleging police racism and brutality over the years. But here's my point. There's no doubt that Reverend Al has been a deeply divisive figure. I mean, going back to Crown Heights, to Juana Broglie, all the rest of it, you all know the biography of the man. But I say that he would be an appropriate speaker if the family unites in the request. Hate him or love him, there's no doubt that Sharpton is New York City, and perhaps as much as this irks people, the nation's preeminent civil rights leader. When you're a civil rights leader, it's not what the majority community or what
non-minority folks feel about you. It's what your constituents feel about you. Is he a leader? Could anyone else in this city? I saw it with my own eyes on Fifth Avenue last year, Sharpton leading that march, 50,000 people coming down Fifth Avenue to protest by Mayor Bloomberg's townhouse on 78th Street off Fifth Avenue. Nobody else in the city could have mustered that kind of numbers. And you have, put that aside, and again, I want your feelings on it, but put that aside and now bring in what the FBI director, James Comey, has recently said about this dangerous schism that has emerged dividing urban communities from the law enforcement professionals that are sworn to protect them. You had Comey, the FBI director, even suggesting that there's a kind of nationwide blue flu right now that's infected thousands, tens of thousands of cops all across our country. Now, the director's premise is that cops are now so disgusted and repulsed and concerned and put off by the negative community reaction to everything they're trying to do. You have activists and others so wired digitally that everything every cop is doing now has the potential of going viral. And according to the FBI director, again, you have cops not doing their best anymore, not doing their most aggressive community policing to stem crimes, not so much here, some here, but not so much here, but really like in Baltimore, where crime's up more than half over the same period a year ago, Chicago up 20%. This new blue flu, it's leading, according to the FBI director. He doesn't have proof, but he assumes it or he presumes it. We've seen a sharp spike in violent crime all across this country. That's why I think Sharpton can make a difference. Hold your nose if you have to. Sharpton can begin the dialogue necessary to reestablish the essential relationship, ladies and gentlemen, between cops and the community that they're sworn to protect and to serve. You have to forget about how you feel personally about Reverend Al. I mean, at least in my opinion. Hold your nose again if you have to. But doesn't it make more sense to have someone like Sharpton taking a lead position in trying to heal this rift between cops and the community? Rather than having somebody, you bring in somebody, some other, you pick a person, Barack Obama, Skip Gates, the Harvard professor, pick someone at Harvard, Cornell West, pick any of these other activists that have no constituency. Doesn't it make more sense to have someone like Sharpton that the community listens to, rather than someone, some intellectual making speeches that fall on deaf ears? Hold your nose if you have to. We have to heal this rift. We have to stop this nonsense where cops feel that they are unwanted and in peril when they go in the community, and the community feels in peril not when they see the crooks, but when they see the cops. This is a recipe for urban disaster. I blame Bill de Blasio for helping encourage it, the mayor, but we've got to get beyond it. That's why I think this is a good move, a good symbolic move, if the family is united. I mean, if they're not united, then I have to suspend my opinion because it's not up to me and it's not up to you. It's up to them, the family, Randolph Holder's family. But I think it is a good beginning, and I think it's necessary, but I will take your calls on it. Now, I know you have a letter from Reverend Al. What is it?
The Reverend Al Sharpton, we got this letter maybe about 10 minutes before airtime today. Basically, a letter that he wrote to Randolph Holder Sr. Of course,
okay,
that's
okay, hold that, hold mm-hmm. that, hold that. Noam will read us Sharpton's letter right after this break.
I spoke to officers privately in one big city precinct who described being surrounded by young people with mobile phones held high, taunting them when they get out of their cars. They said to me, "We feel under siege, and we don't feel much like getting out of our cars." And so the suggestion, the question that's been asked of me is, are these kinds of things changing police behavior all over the country? And is that what explains the map and the calendar? The honest answer is, I don't know. And I don't know that that explains it entirely. But I do have a strong sense that some part of the explanation is a chill wind that has blown through law enforcement over the last year. And that wind is surely changing behavior.
I agree absolutely with the FBI Director James Comey. I know that the White House is pushing back against their own FBI Director, but I think that it is beyond arguing that the thin blue line protecting us against chaos and anarchy and violent crime is beginning to waver. Why? Not because of a lack of courage, not because of a lack of professionalism, but because of a feeling that they are disrespected and unappreciated and at risk. And at risk. That's why I think we need a healing right now. President Obama has not done us any favors in this regard. By his championing of the Black Lives Matter movement out of context, I think it encourages the kind of division and the kind of lack of performance from the cops that we have seen. The division with the community and the cops, and then the fact that cops now say, hey, let me just stay in my patrol car. Why get out and risk everything, including my career and my life, to be disrespected, to have F.U. screamed in my face by demonstrators that are thoughtless and probably from out of town anyway? I totally get it. All right, now let's get to the letter that Noam Layden received from the Reverend Al Sharpton's office concerning the initial invitation by the father of the slain officer, Randolph Holder, to Sharpton to attend the funeral on Wednesday and make some remarks. Noam, take it away.
Yeah, so this was, we had asked, just so you know how this came about, we had sent an email to their office last night, or maybe it was even early this morning, wanting a response because of all these articles in the New York Post where people said police would turn their backs if Al Sharpton showed up at this funeral tomorrow. So then they sent us back, the office, Al Sharpton's office, a letter that he wrote this morning to Randolph Holder Sr., who's Randolph Holder Jr.'s father. And basically, because it's a long letter, I don't want to read the whole thing, but he goes into the fact that he was invited by the Reverend Les Mullings, who's head of the Greater Allen AME Cathedral in Jamaica, where this wake and funeral are taking place today and tomorrow. And he said, I'll read what he said. He said, I thought my coming might give a sense of unity in a city that we can disagree on cases and on policies, but that we are united that the senseless and ruthless killing of officers like your son must be denounced, and we must as a city come together and mourn that loss. I thought you and your pastor's idea that both of you expressed to me on Saturday showed the height of moral leadership, because you cannot heal if you are selective on those that you allow to be in the discussion. And then he goes on to say, it's clear, though, after reading several articles this morning, that some union leaders and others want to turn you and your pastor's noble efforts into some kind of confrontation or sideshow and not keep focused on the brutal, senseless murder of your son. I refuse, despite my strong feelings on police issues, to be part of anything that would marginalize and take away from the focus of the city and the nation mourning your son tomorrow. So, therefore, I respectfully want to inform you and your pastor, I have withdrawn my acceptance of your invitation to attend or to have words at your funeral tomorrow. So that letter's coming moments ago.
I think that, ladies and gentlemen, I think that that is a sad thing that just happened here with Sharpton and the family. If we don't start here, where are we going to start? Look what Quentin Tarantino and these demonstrators did on Sunday or Saturday when you had that anti-police demonstration. What Tarantino and those demonstrators did was spit on the grave of Randolph Holder in a way. I don't mean to be overly dramatic or overly harsh, but to be holding a demonstration, an angry demonstration, where they're flipping the finger to cops in their face and telling them that they're murderers and all the rest of it, a few days after a hero cop is shot in the forehead and killed, I think is just so terribly disrespectful. But I also think that here was this offer from this man who you might consider, if you're a pro-cop person as I am, to be on the other side offering to help bridge this gap. But I think Sharpton is right in terms of him being a sideshow. There would have been tremendous media attention focused on him. And maybe he has done the right thing to withdraw. But I really lament and fear what happens. Ray Kelly, the hero police commissioner, is coming up live. He holds the distinction of being the longest serving police commissioner in the history of the NYPD, two terms. One under Mayor David Dinkins, the other under Mayor Bloomberg. Ray Kelly is a colonel, retired in the United States Marine Corps Reserve. He is a wonderful man, a hero to me and to many of you New Yorkers. He's the author, most recently of the best-selling memoir, Vigilance, My Life Serving America and Protecting Its Empire City. I am delighted to welcome my friend, the former police commissioner, Ray Kelly, to the program.
Rob, thank you for those kind remarks. Always great to be with you.
You know, I opened your book, and I've been reading your book, but I just want to read something right now. Some people said the police commanders were trying to read the political risks to their own careers. The biggest danger police commanders may have calculated was overreacting on the street, so they hardly reacted at all. No reality on the ground seemed to cut through this fog. This is not about today, although it might as well have been about today. This is about the city in the wake of the Crown Heights riots that everybody remembers back in 1991. What parallels do you see, Commissioner Ray Kelly, author of Vigilance, between then and now?
Well, the world has changed dramatically. Crime is way down from what it was certainly in 1991. But there are still efforts, of course, on the part of police leaders throughout the country to be politically correct. And I think there's always a concern when that sort of becomes the overarching issue. I think Jim Comey, the FBI director, was right on target when he made these speeches over the weekend and yesterday when he said that the police are not engaging as they did in the past. And it's the so-called Ferguson effect, and it's reality. Some people don't want to admit it, but it clearly is, certainly from police officers I speak to and people I speak to as I travel throughout the country. So it's a concern, but the city is much safer than it was back when we had the Crown Heights disturbance.
A couple of questions, and my guest, of course, Ray Kelly, the heroic, longest-serving NYPD commissioner, delighted to have him on board. Should Al Sharpton have spoken at the funeral Wednesday of Randolph Holder? Would he have been too gross a distraction, or would he have been symbolically a bridge between this widening gap between black and blue?
I think it's totally up to the Holder family. They're the ones who have to make that call. I would try to leave all the symbolism out of it. It's whatever they want. Obviously, they're the ones that are grieving the most for this terrible loss, and they're the ones that should make that determination.
We had some very strong words from your predecessor, or rather your successor, Bill Bratton. Well, your predecessor and your successor, Bill Bratton, who condemned the demonstration that happened over the weekend, particularly the appearance of Quentin Tarantino, the famed Hollywood director and producer, who came and allowed some really vile statements and remarks about NYPD officers and others across the country just days after the murder of Officer Holder. What do you think about those protesters, that timing, and Tarantino specifically?
Yeah, well, I think it's atrocious, and obviously, just as you said, the timing could not have been worse. I mean, yeah, we believe in free speech in this city, and the police protect it all the time, 24 hours a day. But it was just, totally uncalled for lies, really. And then the fact that it happened after police officer Holder loses his life is just, it just doubles the pain. And I'm surprised that you'd think they'd have more political savvy than to have that demonstration at that time. So I agree with Commissioner Bratton. It was disgraceful.
So is Black Lives Matter generally disgraceful, or is it this incident? I mean, how are you feeling about it?
Well, I certainly believe all lives matter, and that's a term that apparently they don't want to hear. But I think it's very appropriate. And as far as Black Lives Matter, if you look at the Bloomberg administration, there were almost 9,500 fewer murders in the 12 years of Michael Bloomberg's term than it was in the 12 years before Bloomberg took office. And the vast majority of those lives saved, as history as any guide, are young men of color, because that's who's being shot on the street. So you can say in a very meaningful way, Black lives matter to the police department. But
do you fault
that,
in? That, that's oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Phrase that you can use is I think, absurd.
I agree 100% with that. Do you think that Mayor Bill de Blasio, by disrespecting Mayor Bloomberg initially and disrespecting you initially, did he help fuel the divide between black and blue?
Well, he certainly didn't help it. And in 2013, when he started this campaign, the police department had a 70% approval rating. I had a 75% approval rating. I say that not to brag, but to show that there was no great schism between communities of color and the police. Yet that's what he campaigned on other issues, but mainly that issue. So those numbers don't exist today by any means. So I don't think the mayor de Blasio had done very much to close the gap that he thought existed.
Well, tell me, here ladies and gentlemen, I really recommend Vigilance, My Life Serving America and Protecting Its Empire City by Ray Kelly is not only a terrific kind of recounting of all of the trauma and triumph the city has gone through since Commissioner Kelly's, particularly his second term, which happened, which began 4 months after 9/11, but it's also it's his own autobiography and well told. I mean, he came from the being the son of a milkman and the Macy's dressing room checker, growing up on the Upper West Side, becoming a great United States Marine and a great cop, and he's helped keep the city safe. Then I think was grotesquely disrespected by Mayor de Blasio and his administration when they came in. I just don't understand what they had in mind. There was an arrogance about it and an ignorance that is unforgivable. But among other things, and you talk about it in the book, In Vigilance, Commissioner Kelly, the reaction of various Muslim groups to the surveillance program that you put in place, do you think that was necessary in retrospect? And do you fear that terrorism now has an opportunity perhaps it did not have under your reign?
Well, I think it was certainly necessary when we did it. I think it's still necessary. We followed leads wherever those leads took us. We have the most diverse police department in the world that gives the department tremendous language skills, the ability to work with the various communities of the most diversity in the world. So I think it was appropriate. I think it's still appropriate. Hopefully it will continue. I think the terrorism threat is very much with us and is pretty consistent since 9/11. I don't see it drifting very much at all. Our enemies have a different timeline than we do, a different view of history than we do. So the fact that we haven't had a successful attack here doesn't mean that the threat has diminished in any way, in my opinion.
Who can heal this rift between cops and the urban communities?
Well, I don't think it's any one person. I think it's going to take time. I know chiefs throughout America are working on the community relations aspect of their job day in and day out. But again, the nature of policing means that they're always going to have some tension. That's just the reality of it. You know, firefighters, they do a great job. We have the best fire department in the world here. It's a totally different type of work. The police issue summonses, use force, sometimes use deadly force. The bearers of bad news. So you always have to work at getting closer to the community. You don't want them to love you. They're probably never going to love you, but you want mutual respect. And that's what you have to strive for every day. Is there an easy answer? No. You just have to get out there every day and try to have the community understand what you're doing.
You know, from your lips to everyone's ears, I appreciate you, Commissioner Ray Kelly. Vigilance is the book, My Life Serving America and Protecting Its Empire City. You can get it now, big bestseller. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks, Ray.
Geraldo, thank you so much.
Okay, welcome back. I want at the top of the hour to shift to politics. Now a national poll, not just the polls from Iowa, but one national poll is showing Dr. Ben Carson has surpassed Donald Trump. Carson now leading Trump in that one national poll, which is a stunning development. We'll talk about it. A lot of the commentators this morning saying, remember, we're 100 days into the race, but just over 3 months from the first voting. And at this point, Herman Cain had just yielded his lead to Newt Gingrich, neither of them factoring in when push came to shove in 2012. So has Trump now had his moment? Is the Donald now going to fade? He put out a statement. Anyway, I'll get to that at the top of the hour. Let me stick. Now, what about Al Sharpton? Could Sharpton play a positive role in helping heal the rift between the black community and the blue community, between cops and the urban community that they are sworn to protect and to serve? Let me ask Laura in Harlem. Hi, Laura. How have you been?
Hi. How are you? You know, I'm very upset right now what Curtis said. I have a cold. Also, Geraldo, I took my 15-year-old grandson to Al Sharpton Action, National Action Network Saturday.
Right.
I took him there for two reasons. The first reasons were I know the house was packed, and everyone there was extremely upset over what happened to this cop, what happened to the cop before that. I wanted my grandson to see this, Geraldo, because my son, my husband, my ex, we raised our son here in Harlem to respect cops. Do you understand that? My
Absolutely.
Son has never
Me
been
too.
In trouble. My yeah. son raised his 15-year-old to respect cops. We don't want him to ever think that that gesture that was made with their finger up at these cops, that we applaud that. If Al Sharpton, for one minute fraction of a second, was a part of any anti-cops, I definitely wouldn't be a part of that organization. And I wanted my son to see that firsthand. Now, what he may have did 30, 40 years ago, I don't know. But I know what goes on in there now. And I know the main two functions there. It's the thug life that's going on in our communities. I wanted my grandson to meet some of those that are out here on ground that the cameras do not see. They get no funding, but they're out there. They're out there trying to stop what's going on in our community, as well as the fact how we stood up in terms of trying to get rid of these thugs, because we were totally against anti-police. We are not anti-police. We are anti-bad police. We are anti-thugs in our community. So
all right, Laura, great. I love your passion.
Thank
and
you.
If you're that steamed up with a cold, man, when you're feeling well, you would really be tearing it up. Let me get one last call in before the break. Is Edwin in Brooklyn. What's up, Edwin?
Hey, Geraldo. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind, bud?
I'm good. I grew up in the hood all my life. I still live in the hood. I'm doing pretty well for myself. And, you know, I decided that I don't want to leave my community. I was there in the 80s. I lived in the Bronx. You know, I don't know if you know Larry David. He shot 10 cops back in the days.
I sure certainly do remember.
I live right around the corner. I knew his whole family. Back then, I did see a lot of corruption with the police officers. But I was never into that lifestyle of crime and all that. And, you know, I'm just feeling like the cops are getting a bad rap right now for what's happening. But also,
so you agree they're getting a bad rap?
I do agree. But also, a lot of times, you know, what happened, the turnaround in our community, we did that. We don't have, as you see right now, the violence is down, crime is down dramatically. We did that.
We'll be back.
I want to ask you about trying to settle once and for all your relationship with polls. When you're ahead in the polls, you cite them, you act like they're scientific gospel. When we see polls where you're behind, sometimes you'll often will challenge the pollster, the organization, the methodology, the legitimacy of the poll. So how do you determine how do you justify or explain attacking polls where you're behind but celebrating polls where you're ahead?
Well, I think you have to understand polls. And when I was at school, when I was at Wharton, we actually had a case on polls. We had a one-month study on polls. And I believe in polls. I generally believe in polls. The thing with these polls, they're all so different. They're coming from all over the lot, where one guy's up here and somebody else is up there, or you see swings of 10 and 12 points, and, you know, like immediately, even the same day. So right now, it's not very scientific. I think it's very hard when you have this many. But overall, Mark, I am a believer in polls. I think they say something. At least they spot a trend.
And the trend that apparently that we are seeing is that Donald Trump is no longer the front runner, at least not in this one big poll. I'll have the details on the poll as we progress. Welcome back, 77 WABC. Geraldo here, along with Noam Layden. Now, I, Noam, think that Trump is still the prohibitive favorite to win the nomination. I still think that what's happening with Dr. Ben Carson will be a passing fancy. Trump has not yet begun spending his money. I'm interested what 866 or older, what you at home feel about Dr. Ben Carson's surge, not only in Iowa, but in this one national poll. But you have Trump here saying that he's proud of his effort, even if he does eventually lose, because he's done very well. He also says that he will be willing to spend whatever it takes to win. And he also says about Dr. Ben Carson, who has been topping these polls in Iowa and moving to the forefront, at least in this one national poll, Trump is saying that a lot of things will come out now and we'll see how Dr. Ben Carson holds up to the scrutiny. So you think people have looked behind the curtain here in the Wizard of Oz and seen that there's nobody behind behind the Trump genie, or do you think this is just a passing fancy?
I think it's a passing fancy. And remember, tomorrow night is another Republican debate, so a chance for Donald Trump to shine. And if you remember, Ben Carson, I mean, you know, he was at those debates, but I don't remember, it wasn't memory memorable, except for the first one, anything about those debates. He has to have a super performance, because then you know that these polls have been fueled in a big way by these debates. And you wonder if Trump just comes out, you know, swinging like he has in the other ones, that he'll be right back there on top of Carson again.
I hope that Donald Trump is not in any way humbled by this. I think that if he begins to change who he is in any kind of essential way, then I think that the flight from Trump will become a stampede. The way it has with Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is so joyless. He is so whiny lately that I can't see that anyone is going to support him. A lot of people are talking at Marco Rubio now. I still say, look at Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio has been a senator in name only. He's avoided, I think he's missed 50 different votes so far in the United States Senate as he campaigns desperately for the nomination, for the Republican nomination. But let me say a couple of things. Number one, I think that it is absolutely absurd to continue having Rick Santorum and Bobby Jindal and George Pataki, and I like Governor Pataki. He's a good guy. Socialized with him. I like him. But he's polling less than zero. Lindsey Graham, another person I like. Lindsey Graham's politics are most like my politics of anyone in the race, Democrat or Republican. But he has had zero traction. He's losing to Donald Trump in a gigantic way. Okay, now I have the national poll here. It's the CBS New York Times poll. Okay, so let's assume with CBS and the New York Times, and I think that it is a fair assumption, when you have a Fox News poll or a CBS New York Times poll, I think that you think that I think that, you know, in some way, shape, or form, the identity of the pollster is going to affect the bottom line. But so this is admittedly the most liberal poll you could possibly have. It's a national poll, but it has Ben Carson surpassing Donald Trump for the first time nationally. Here you have 26%, according to the CBS New York Times poll, 26% of Republican primary voters backing Carson, giving him a 4-point edge over Donald Trump at 22%. And support for Dr. Carson has quadrupled since August. So he is clearly the flavor of the fall, at least so far. Now you have the rest of the Republican candidates lagging far behind in single digits. Marco Rubio, who I said is surging, he's surging up to third place at 8%. So he's approximately one-third Trump's vote, less than that of Carson's vote, Marco Rubio, followed by Bush at 7 and Carly Fiorina at 7. And everybody else is at 4% or lower. So I think a couple of things. I think I'm going to play you some more of Trump's sound from this morning. But I want to point out the thing about this debate that no mention happens tomorrow night on CNBC. It is, on the Business Channel appropriately, supposed to focus on economic issues. That means it's going to focus on taxes. It's going to focus on retirement savings. I hope it's going to focus on the crisis in the whole area of college loans. It's going to focus on the necessary, issue of job growth. And I'm telling you, if this isn't Donald Trump's strong suit, then nothing is. Like on interest rates. I mean, interest rates, your eyes kind of glass over. What the hell? How does that affect me? Interest rates. But Donald Trump will have to know that. And I would hope that the moderators of the CNBC debate, and I'm sure the first question will go to Donald Trump. He is, after all, the centerpiece in the panel of 10 up there, many of whom I don't even think on the panel of 10 should be there anymore. But let's say that these 10 deserve to be on that big stage. He's going to get the first couple of questions. He's going to get the first question and a follow-up. He's a billionaire businessman. He's made his success in business his strong suit. He has to be, succinct and clear and learned on these issues of taxes and retirement savings and student loans and job growth and interest rates and so forth. If he shows the same kind of generalization or bombast that he has in the previous debates, I think that it will accelerate Trump's eventual decline. If he performs well and strongly, and Dr. Carson, on the other hand, is revealed to be someone who doesn't know, shat from Shinola about the economy, then I think that he can reverse Ben's surge. But Trump will continue to crumble if he doesn't have a succinct performance. And remember, even though I'm reading you the CBS New York Times national poll, in other polls, Trump is still up nationally, and he's still up big time in New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Florida, the three of the four early primary states. So it is there are interesting developments. A lot is afoot right now, but I believe that that a lot depends now. I mean, everything depends on everything, but I think this poll performance will be very important. Jay and Suffren, what are you thinking? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, hi. Well, I was just saying, I teach pre-med students who said to me the other day, who knew that to be a neurosurgeon, you didn't have to be so smart?
I absolutely understand that, but intelligence in a general way doesn't mean that you specifically know how to run companies, how to make tax policy, how to understand what retirement savings are all about. Not that he can't learn. Listen, you know, anybody could take economics 101. Anyone could become even conversant on it. The question is, how expert are they? Were you suggesting in satirically there, because you're a teacher, Jay, that I am de-minimizing Ben Carson's intellect?
No, I'm saying the student said, you know, apparently you don't have to be so smart to be a neurosurgeon. Look, we're never going to elect a president who thinks global warming is a myth. That will never happen.
Doesn't Ben Carson think it is a myth? He believes in the Garden of Eden. Maybe it was more temperate there.
I don't think you're going to get a creationist elected either.
That's another interesting point. Ladies and gentlemen, will we ever have a, and thank you for your call there, Jay. Let me take Vincent. Vincent's been holding on. I think he's a first-time caller from Hillside. What's up, Vincent? What have you been calling about?
Geraldo, good morning.
Good morning to you. What's on your mind?
It is a sad day that we people cannot respect each other when we don't even, fail to disagree with each other. My point is that this fallen officer should be respected, you know. The parents apparently have extended invitation to Al Sharpton. And the only way they can honor and respect this fallen officer would be to invite him and let him come and speak. And also, I don't agree that all the officers are bad. In all aspects of life, you have some good eggs and have bad eggs. So in most cases, they do a good job. But if we cannot start talking about the solution, when are we going to do this? Is that when more people are killed on the street?
I'm with you, Vincent. And don't be a stranger. I appreciate the call.
Would be, to my own personal opinion, somebody who I agree with you on that issue. Let him extend the arm of reconciliation. Let something start happening now, not when more people are killed on the street.
I'm with you, Vincent. I appreciate the call. I wish that this controversy had not occurred. I think that it was inevitable because everywhere Sharpton goes, he trails controversy behind. I wish that it had turned out other than it has. Now Sharpton has dropped out and withdrawn his acceptance of the invitation he says he received from Randolph Holder, the slain cop's dad. All right, back to politics. Let me take Robert in Brooklyn. What's on your mind, buddy? Thanks for calling.
Geraldo. Oh, boy, Ben Carson. I'm hoping that the nation start to listen to what this guy says, and you're going to find that he doesn't make a lot of sense.
Tell me what you mean.
Well, what I mean, when you start calling, you're equating women to slave, that has abortions to slavery. You know, come on, man. You know, what is that like? Like a woman who has an abortion, that's got to be the worst feeling in the world. And why would you want to equate this woman as being some part of slavery?
Right. What, you know, what he did precisely was to equate the fetus with a slave. He said, in slavery, and he knew that he was going into sensitive territory, he said, in slavery, slaveholders felt that they could do anything they wanted to their slaves, just like pregnant women think that they can do anything they want to their fetus. That's his parallel.
And that's nonsense, because some women, they have to have an abortion. It's they can't help it.
I'm with you, brother. That's what I believe.
Donald Trump is too erratic. This man is way too erratic to be the president of the United States.
So who do you like, Robert, right now?
Right now, I don't know. I like Sanders. You want to know the truth? I like Sanders. I'll be
you
honest.
I like Sanders in the sense that I find him refreshing, but I can't get out. I appreciate the call, Robert. I can't get out of my mind that there is no Bernie Sanders, that he's really Larry David.
Ben Carson now holds a 14-point lead over Donald Trump in Iowa. Experts say Carson appeals to Iowa's conservatives, Iowa's evangelicals, and both of Iowa's black people. So, excited. Having a good time. Today is Hillary Clinton's 68th birthday. There was an awkward moment when a stripper jumped out of her birthday cake and said, whoops, wrong Clinton.
You know, I don't know how. You know, I do know how. When I look at poor Erica, now it's a lot less extreme than it was when we hooked up 15 years ago. But 15 years ago, that was the kind of jokes that were made about me, and she had to hear it, and it was very, it was hard on her ears. I just imagine what it must be like for Hillary Clinton, knowing that this, that every joke about her husband has to do with him checking out someone's boobs or backside or hitting on this one or hitting on that one. And it's not like people remember, it seems to me. It's not like Bill Clinton is remembered as a revered president, or maybe that's overstating, not remembered as a guy who left a budget surplus when he left office and the world relatively at peace. He's not remembered as that. He's remembered as a dilettante, a playboy, a sex addict, a cheater, although he is beloved. I want to add that, and he's one of the most popular political figures in America, maybe indeed in the world. But to get that constant joking, that constant ribbing, that constant, oh, yeah, there's Hillary. We know it. Where's Bill? They're checking out. Who's he checking out? Is he checking out the cleavage of the people in the front row?
And he is. I think that's the best part. Because you see him, and you know that's what he's doing. And you realize at the same point, you say, it's one thing when you get political pot shots.
That's because we're projecting.
Of course, because I'm looking at the same boobs that he is. It's one thing if someone takes political pot shots at you. You know, everybody has thick skin for that. But, yeah, I would think, how thick is Hillary Clinton's skin when it comes to that? Because that's hurtful. I mean, that's personal, that's deep, and it's stuff that really happened to her.
Telling you, that lady has some pretty, that's a rhino skin she has after that 11-hour grilling she got. In West Hampton Beach, Barry's on the line. Hey, Barry, what are you thinking about? Thanks for calling.
You know, I'm thinking about a lot of things, but thanks for picking up the phone. So, somebody said that your caller before said that Trump is irrational. But I have to tell you something. That's crazy good for me. I like Ben Carson. But I think Ben Carson has lived a fairly cloistered existence, first in academia and then in the hospital. And, you know, smart is not enough. I know he's a smart man, but smart doesn't just cut it. I think today we need a guy who can speak his mind, not be afraid, not be beholden to anybody else. And I think Mr. Trump is that guy. You know, unfortunately, statesmen that we once knew no longer exist. I think in this country, and I think in others as well. So I think, you know, the playing field has changed. And because it's changed, either we change with it or we're going to suffer the consequences.
So answer this question for me, Barry. What do you think of these polls?
I don't think much about these polls, quite honestly.
Oh, if you care about the political process, you've got to see that there is something afoot. I mean, there is definitely movement toward Ben Carson. I mean, it seems to be fueled by the most vigorous of the Tea Party and the evangelical vote. But you definitely have some movement away from Trump toward Carson.
But that's only in Iowa, isn't it? I mean,
now you have this national poll I've been reporting, the CBS and New York Times poll out today, showing Ben Carson edging out Donald Trump 26-22 nationally. That's the CBS and New York Times. I think something did, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Let me go to here is Lee in Stanford. Lee, what are you thinking about, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks.
Okay. I really took issue with something yesterday, and I was on hold for a while, and I had to go.
Oh, well, tell me today. You can catch up. Catch up.
Okay. Yesterday, when you were talking to somebody, you kept peppering him. Isn't Donald Trump disqualified because of his views on immigration and Latinos? And the guy wasn't sure. But then I'm thinking to myself, why don't you ask the same questions with Hillary? When the fact that the night of the attack, she knew there was no video involved, and they played this to the American people for a week or 2 weeks just to get, the president reelected. Why should she be qualified if she can't even tell us the truth?
Well, I think that that's an issue that people have to come to grips with. As I said, I believe that, put aside the night of the attack, because I don't think that anything more could have been done, and I think that's now been proven 8 times, and even Trey Gowdy and the other panelists on the Republican investigatory body there agree that nothing more could have been done militarily to save those people on the night of the attacks. But I think it is fair game. Well, hold on, man. I think it is fair game, absolutely, to concentrate on the way the Democrats spun what happened, that tragedy, to gain politically on an issue they could have lost the election if Republicans had focused on.
Democrat Lincoln Chafee ended his campaign today.
Now, as you may know, I've been campaigning on a platform of prosperity through peace.
Actually, we did not know that you were campaigning at all.
Former Virginia Senator Jim Webb announcing he is dropping out of the race.
I'm withdrawing from any consideration of being the Democratic Party's nominee for the presidency.
Yes, Jim Webb is withdrawing from consideration. I'm sure that will come as a disappointment to his supporter. So sad. So sad.
All right, that's Colbert talking about Chafee and Jim Webb.
Of course, as a former member of the Reagan administration, Webb realized that he was a tough sell to district Democrat.
I fully accept that my views on many issues are not compatible with the power structure and the nominating base of the Democratic Party.
Yes, there are many issues where they're not compatible, like guns, the budget, and should Jim Webb be president? No, I think not.
All right, so there's Colbert going after Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee. What those guys were doing running when they have zero support, I feel the same way. I feel that, Santorum, I know he made a run. I know he came tantalizingly close. Not really, but at least he made a respectful run. He won in Iowa. Bobby Jindal, I don't know why that guy, the Louisiana governor, keeps doing. I mean, it's not like Louisiana's in great shakes. George Pataki was the three-term governor in New York State, but he did not leave with a great deal of standing ovations. Anyway, and Lindsey Graham, for all his moderation and the sense he makes, has absolutely not resonated whatsoever. But the big news today, Ben Carson surge in the Iowa polls. You know, you've got, less than 14 weeks now to the first voting, so just over 3 months to the first voting. Donald Trump now pledging to spend some money if he has to, do whatever he can. He says that even if he loses, though, and people have asked him now or started asking him what happens if he loses the Republican nominating contest, Trump saying, quote, I'd still be proud of my effort because I've done very well. When you think about it, he has done well in terms of branding. The Trump brand now, if it could be, is more well-known than ever it was. The question is, can he now convert that into cash if that's what he wants? Or now, is he really in this Democratic, rather this Republican contest to win it? I think that you would lose some money if you prematurely jumped off the Trump bandwagon. But in the Carson case, I am still fascinated by the whole issue of can a creationist, can someone who is anti-science in the extent that, you know, there's now generations of established science showing that humans evolved from apes and so forth, that there was not a literal Garden of Eden, maybe in some figurative sense there was, maybe the first man, emerged the missing link in the jungles of Africa or the rainforest or someplace, and maybe that's where the tradition of the Garden of Eden stems from. I don't know. I'm trying to put the best spin as I possibly can on it, being as I am a multi-religious skeptic. I'm a spiritualist, and I try to, particularly at my advanced age, try to grapple with what happens when the lights go out. But I find it very difficult to think that a man with absolutely no experience running anything, but a brilliant neurosurgeon though he was. I mean, his claim to fame is that he separated those two Siamese twins, and they both survived, at least initially. How does that translate into the presidency? He's a very, very nice man. I've interviewed him on this program several times already. Hope to speak to him more. And maybe I'll ask him directly that question. I have asked him about the Garden of Eden, but I want to ask him more specifically. Does he think a creationist, a Seventh-day Adventist, can win? Here's Mark in Hoboken. What's up, Mark? Thanks for calling. 866 Arella. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, I just got two quick points. I listen to you every day, but today I'm kind of disappointed in you in a way. Nothing bad, but it's just fine. I find it funny that you didn't bring up that little girl in that classroom when that punk.
Oh, you know, I've been thinking about that. I'm glad you reminded me about that. I'm very keen on that. Just get me the Wire story of the cop who now is suspended. The viral video, one of the students shot a disruptive student, a female student, in high school. The cop comes in to remove her. She resists. He uses force to drag her out of the classroom. And, everybody's seeing it. And the issue is, what is appropriate force? I mean, what's a cop to do? Let me finish, Mark. If a student who's acting out is being disruptive, and the cop says, okay, come with me, and the student says, I'm not going anywhere with you, and the cop then uses force to drag her out of the classroom, this is a child. This is a child that the cop is using his hands on in this manner, and he never expected it would be videotaped. She's dragged out now. There is all hell to pay. People are protesting. And go ahead, Mark. Now, thank you for bringing it up, and what's your point?
Yeah, my point is this. There is no denying. I'm an attorney. There is no denying that if that was an Asian student, or a white student that was acting out in class, there was no doubt in my mind or any other's mind that he would have done the same thing. If you can't admit that,
that's your surmise. I don't know. I don't know that that's a fact. I mean, it's very hard for me to say that that's a fact. Let's assume that you're correct. What's your point?
I am correct. And another issue is that.
So you think the cop's being a racist in treating her in that manner?
You can't call him a racist because you don't know him. But what I can do is say that his intolerance level is lower because she's black. He would have a higher tolerance level if she was somebody else. You know why? because the consequences of his actions would have been more severe if it was somebody else. That's a fact.
You mean if it was my child, it might have been a lot different.
Oh, yep. My God.
And that's another good point. Hey, listen, and I appreciate your call. Like I
just want to say one more thing real quick.
Go ahead, Mark.
There's one more thing. Now, I got a question for you, and nobody can answer this. I think I'm a very intelligent guy. Nobody can answer this question. With the cops shooting kids or people unarmed and everything, we know all of that, and the black people are animals, and they should get shot. I know all of that. I get the drift. But what about in those days in the 50s and 60s when I look at films when the cops is beating those black people with clubs and everything? What did they do then? Did they have on hoodies, or what was the excuse then? That's my question.
All right, that's another good point, but I want to stick, I think.
But try to answer it, though.
Rather than answer history, let me stick to what is appropriate. Would that cop have done that to that child? You should see the video. I mean, just put on CNN for a minute or any of the news channels, Fox News. Everybody's running the video. The video is very alarming. There's two different angles where you have a – all right, now here's let me see, where is it? I'm looking.
You know, there's a lot of people saying about this video that a lot took place before the video started to roll, as it is in a lot of these cases. And the people who are defending this resource officer who pulled this girl out, and I mean, it's horrible
to
watch.
Is he a cop also? I know they call him a resource officer.
You know, I don't know. That I can't tell you. I don't know if he's officially an officer, but they're not calling him an officer anywhere. They keep calling him this resource officer, which makes me think he works full-time inside the school. But they say that the student.
But, you know, we have NYPD inside some of our high schools.
Oh, that's true. That's true. So, but they're saying that there's a lot we didn't see that took place between this girl, a teacher, an administrator, and this officer before the video started to roll, that she got lots of warnings, that she had been belligerent. But then you have the other side, the ACLU coming out very strongly to saying that today that they can't imagine a situation where a child would need to be treated like that in a classroom. So you're getting both
all
sides.
All right, and the cop is white. He was named in 2013 in a federal lawsuit claiming he unfairly and recklessly targeted African-American students with allegations of gang membership and criminal gang activity. This lawsuit came from an alleged gang member who was expelled from school because of the officer. I don't know how what the lawsuit, how the resolution. I know that the cop denied the charges. It happened in Columbia, South Carolina. It's been drawing intense criticism, and so I'm so glad that Mark brought it up and that we're talking about it, albeit late in the program. But the question is there justification for physically roughing up a child, a student, a high school student, who is acting out in class? Is there justification if the student's actions are not threatening the other students but are disrupting the class and the teacher wants them out? Is there justification for the cop to literally drag the child out of the classroom? I think that's a very good question. And you've got all kinds of angles on the video. But first he slams her over. And then once she's slammed over, she's still clutching onto the desk, you know, those desks that are attached. He drags her and the desk out, a black female student and a white cop. The last thing we need right now out of Columbia, South Carolina, but the way viral videos work now, what happens in South Carolina happens everywhere instantly. Everybody now looking at it and making their own judgment. But you can check it out and make your judgment. At the urging of Mark, one of our regular listeners from Hoboken, we've been talking for the last 15 minutes about the student slammed to the ground in Columbia, South Carolina by a cop who previously, a white cop, black student, a cop who previously had been sued for using excessive force. He's the school safety officer. You know, what do you do? What do you do in a cop? Is it ever appropriate for, an officer? And he's also a weightlifter, the cop, so he's a powerful, powerful individual. And it looks it when he flips that kid over. All right, Bill, you're probably my last call of the day. What are you telling your mind, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo. Well, you know what? That caller that said he was an attorney, that guy, in my opinion, was a real jerk. First of all, he doesn't know who would be pulled out of there, okay? Who'd be pulled out of that seat? He said it was an Asian kid. But I'll tell you what, The odds are, if it were an Asian kid, and I'm telling you for a fact, if it was my daughter, that would cop wouldn't have had to pull anybody out, because they would have stood up and respected their authority at that point and walked out of that classroom. There was no need for that. And nobody looks at the fact that, you know what, people out there are pushing this war against the cops. So a lot of black people are acting up to white cops because they know nothing is going to happen to them, and it is most probably going to turn into a lawsuit, and then somebody's going to make money on it.
So you think that it will be the lawyers that make the money? The question is, how do you enforce discipline appropriately in a school when you have a student that's acting out?
You got to do it at home. That's why I'm saying my daughters would not do that.
Well,
they wouldn't know how to be pulled out.
My daughters would not do it either, but it happened in this case.
There is a pattern here.
I got it, and it adds to the narrative. This narrative, this terrible racial thing that's happening, I sense it. I don't like it. This is something going on here. I feel that we have to dig in now. I want the president to step in. The president's got to say something. I think that in this particular case, I don't know what happened before this video started. They say that there were that this kid was really giving a lot of trouble. But what would be the appropriate thing to do? What do? Do you stop the entire class if the student's just acting out? I'm assuming that the student is not disabled in any way and knew exactly what she was doing, was being spiteful and disruptive. It's a very, very difficult scene, but you don't use physical force.